Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone. We are standing by. E-Talk is not yet talking about the Grey Cup 112th edition in Winnipeg. So we'll tell you when it comes who's going to be the Grey Cup halftime show. We have Thursday Night Football tonight. The Steelers and the Bengals, Old Man Football, Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco at quarterback. And then the Jays coming up at 6:33. The Brewers and the Dodgers are underway. It's 1-1 in the third inning in that one. But Dave Naylor is our CFL analyst, and we've been having a lot of fun talking about the potential of a four-way tie and also the potential for the CFL having to do the last tie-breaking scenario. Dave Naylor, do you know the last tie-breaking procedure in the Canadian Football League for the playoffs?
I do not off the top of my head.
It is a coin toss between
the
tied teams. It's in the rule book.
We looked it up.
Oh, my goodness.
Option J is coin toss.
Coin toss.
Would TSN televise it live?
I would think we might. Yeah, absolutely. How long does a coin toss take? But we should do it in SportsCenter. That would be awesome.
You could totally drag it out for at least an hour.
Oh,
well, Jimmy, just you could build up some anticipation, and then the actual act takes, 3 seconds or whatever it takes to flip a coin in the air. I think you could be onto something there.
Build
the drama, and then bang, there goes the coin flip.
My recommendation is get rid of a bunch of the other tiebreakers and make the coin toss like the third thing
higher up.
Put that thing higher up. Forget the quotient of points scored for and against. No, nobody wants to do math. Let's just go straight to the coin toss for the tiebreaker for the Canadian football.
And then put the coin in the Hall of Fame, which is about 200 yards from where I'm standing right now. It's like Tim Hortons Field.
And you got to have a special coin, too. That's a good point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you got to have a special coin. Then you need an entertainment act for that show.
Oh, there we go. Well, it's all coming together.
You guys are a plethora of ideas.
50 Cent.
I know who that is.
Okay, there we go. We found one that Dave knows.
Yeah.
But when we get ready for this week in the Canadian Football League, Dave, when you look at the Rough Riders against the Bombers, let's start there. This lineup they posted today, yes, Jake Mayer is starting. Yes, some of their starting receivers. But this lineup is full of players who have played in the Canadian Football League. I'm telling everybody, I'm picking the Bombers to win. But don't sleep on the Rough Riders tomorrow, Dave.
Well, I think there's probably the ingredient in the Saskatchewan-Winnipeg game. It's impossible to take all the emotion out of it, right? It's even though the game doesn't matter to Saskatchewan. Look, and the Bombers have been, I would say, a difficult team to predict this year. And I mean it both ways. It's not like sometimes you expect they're going to play really well, and they don't play that well. And then other times you expect them are going to get beat, and they get off the mat, and they say, no, we're not done yet. So to me, they have been one of the hardest teams to anticipate and predict all season. And so throw them in a game that doesn't matter for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, but they're dressed in a decent lineup of, as you say, not that many guys, not many teams have a backup quarterback who was a starter for 3 years, and like Jake Mayer does. So I kind of go with you on this one. Playing free, right? Not the pressure's on the Bombers. Riders playing free. I wouldn't be sure about this one. I agree with you.
One of the things that we are certain that Stu will not be able to destroy in the CFL is the unpredictability of this game and the craziness at the end of the season. And we are looking at that with the Elks right now, with a chance that they could still make the playoffs. Dave Naylor.
I'd say we are a ways away from Coach of the Year, but I have got to really tip my hat to Mark Killam and the job that he's done to rescue this season, and not just from it being a complete washout like it looked it might be during the first 5-6 weeks of the season, but to put this team in position to compete for a playoff spot. And they were 1-4 when they went into their bye week 7. Edmonton was, and with a 1-4 team, you might be tempted to say, they're a lot better than their record. Actually, no, they were worse than their record. They were. Like, look at that first 7 weeks worth of statistics, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They were atrocious. And, so much of the attention, as is the nature in sports, they changed the quarterback. Okay, go look at the stats. Go look what Edmonton was averaging going into that bye week per points per game. it's about the same as their season average. Like their average, they managed to raise their average from that point to this point of the year about a point a game. That's it.
Now, wow.
There's stability. Yeah, it's not the turnaround you think it was on offense. Now, there's stability there, right? They're not turning over the ball as much. The time of possession has improved, and all those things support your defense, and plus there's a little more belief in the locker room. But the real change at Edmonton is on defense. That's where this team has been really improved. The first ever, those games going into that bye week, they've given up 30 every single week, 30 or more. Since that, in the last 11 games, they've given up 30 once. And of the last 11 games, they've had one game that wasn't either an Edmonton victory or a loss by less than one score. They had one loss of more than one score since that bye. So we were having a conversation the other day among, you know, reporters and producers, and the question was tossed out, boy, who in the West do you trust? And I said, Edmonton. And I was like, what? I said, go look at their last 11 games. Other than the 28-7 loss to Calgary, which I believe was the week after that's the Labor Day game. Sorry, excuse me, not the week after. That's it. Every other game has come right down to the wire with them. So I think Mark Killam and his staff have done a tremendous job to get this team to that position.
As we get ready for the Icy Hot Bowl tonight, it is Joe Flacco versus Aaron Rodgers on Thursday Night Football, Dave.
Oh, boy.
What are we thinking? When are we starting to take the Pittsburgh Steelers, Aaron Rodgers, a lot more seriously, or should we have already?
Well, you know, I think you should have already. And I'm going to go back to training camp when I was down in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and was doing kind of a deep dive into the Steelers before I went down there. And I thought, you know what? I think this actually has some traction. And I think we all kind of look, the Aaron Rodgers thing is the headline, right? It's the whole story going into the Steelers, and there's no way to avoid it. And I think the parallels were natural to come up that, you know, what happened with the Jets, where basically, you know, everybody was at that organization when Aaron Rodgers arrived is gone. And then look where they are right now, winless. And it's the scar of the Aaron Rodgers experience. But it was different, right? They didn't hand the keys to Aaron Rodgers. They didn't hire his offensive coordinator. They didn't go out and trade for his friends. And I remember the day I was there, I asked Mike Tomlin, I said, you know, how is Aaron Rodgers fitting in here as a Steeler? You guys have a very, you know, specific culture and way of doing things. And his line to me was, when you're in Rome, you act like a Roman. And that's kind of was his way that he was talking about on Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, it's not the Aaron Rodgers who throws the ball all over the field the way we remember in Green Bay. And it does still, I think, take some getting used to, but they've got a good defense. They've got some really good pass rushers up front, and they're going to be more of a, ground and pound, throw the ball to DK Metcalf, involve the tight ends, a little more conservative offense than we've used to seeing. But I am kind of a bit of a believer in the Steelers. And you look at that division they're in the AFC North. I mean, the Bengals are, you know, trying to get off the mat with Joe Flacco. The Ravens are having a disastrous season. And you got Cleveland. So tell me Pittsburgh can't win that division.
My Bills, let's jump into those waters. 4-2. They've lost their last two. The Patriots game, I mean, that one, I wasn't that bothered by that one. It was a close game. You got to wonder what you know, where the offense went that day. The game on Monday, the loss to the Falcons, Dave, there was a real disconnect between what's going on with that offense. It just looked like Josh was playing a different game.
Yeah, it did. And I think that the troubling part of that game for Buffalo is that on both sides of the ball, they didn't seem to be ready for what Atlanta brings. Not a great secret about what Atlanta does on offense, right? Bijan Robinson, they're going to run it with him, and they're going to throw it to him, and Drake London. Those are the two guys, first-round draft picks on offense. That's their playmakers. And the Bills let them run all over them in the first half of the game. And then the other part of it, you know, Atlanta went into that game, highest blitz rate in the league. You know that's what they do. And they brought that, and Buffalo seemed unprepared for it. I mean, that, you know, Josh Allen was pressured far more than he has been at any point this year. I mean, the Bills have a very good and stable and healthy offensive line that doesn't get taken advantage of very often that way. And I think you had a perfect storm of them not able to handle the pressure up front. And then the Bills are down Dalton Kincaid. They're down Josh Palmer. They're down Curtis Samuel. And as you say, Josh Allen didn't have a great day. He looks like a different guy. But this is one of these things, guys. I always say this in the first couple months of an NFL season. Once you're done looking at a team's record, look at who they played, because that can really be revealing. The Bills have a stunning stat. Their four wins this year have come against teams that are a combined 3-21. And yes, the Ravens were not that kind of team when they played them in week number one, but you know, it's the Jets, it's New Orleans, and Miami. By the way, Miami was driving for a go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter, and New Orleans had a go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter that was pulled off the board of its penalty. So it's not like they trounced those teams. And all of a sudden, you step up against 2-2 teams in back-to-back games, and as you say, Locker, it's the offensive stuff that is really stunning, because we have not seen the Bills' offense look like that in a long, long time. And their bye comes at, a good time, but they got to figure some stuff out.
They got the Chiefs in 2 weeks. Like, get it together.
And the Eagles within the next month as well. You know, and look, you know, a Carolina team that scored a whole bunch of points this season, you know, coming up. And so, I mean, they're going to have to keep pace with them coming right out of the bye.
The Bucs look good. They got the Bucs coming up.
They got the Bucs. Yeah, the Bucs on their schedule as well coming. And they have overall a very soft schedule. So it's amazing how quickly, you know, a team can look like a juggernaut and then all of a sudden look very ordinary, particularly if their superstar quarterback, you know, isn't getting the protection, doesn't have the targets, and isn't on his game the way. And they got injuries on both sides of the defense. And the other part is the draft, right? In today's NFL, you have to get contributions from rookie players. Yeah, especially if you're a team that's been at the top of the standings for the last 3-4 years, like the Bills have been, because that means you're maxed out on the cap, right? Well, their number one pick is a corner, Maxwell Hairston, last practiced on July 29th. Their number two pick, defensive tackle TJ Sanders, is on IR. Their number three pick, defensive lineman Landon Jackson, played 12 snaps the other night. There's their first three picks. The contribution from the game the other night, 12 snaps on defense. So it's never one thing. It's multiple things. Humility comes fast, and it has arrived in Buffalo on bye week.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is your Grey Cup halftime show. MGK, also known as Machine Gun Kelly, will be the Grey Cup halftime show.
Woo-hoo!
Britain's excited, so that's kind of the generation that they're after. But I'm excited about who's playing the kickoff concert right before kickoff of the Grey Cup. I'll tell you who that is next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Canadian Football League has finally announced the lineup for the 112th Grey Cup. Our Lady Peace is going to kick you off with the kickoff series concert.
I don't hate that.
They usually do a couple of songs before all the anthems and everything else start. And then the halftime show for the Grey Cup in Winnipeg, Machine Gun Kelly, and now better known as MGK, is the halftime show.
Little deep, no?
I feel yes, but like Britton came in and he was like, let's go.
Yeah.
He was, so that's kind of the generation they're looking at, I believe.
A younger day.
It's not for us anymore.
No.
We've aged ourselves out.
But
we get the kickoff series with Our Lady Peace, the halftime show.
I do think that this Machine Gun Kelly is worth more of a boycott than Bad Bunny.
Well,
could be mad about something.
Better than the one Saskatchewan had in 2022.
I can't stay forever. Let's play pretend.
Catchy, and you can dance to it.
Sure. Machine Gun Kelly is the Grey Cup halftime show. MGK is his brand now. If you're looking on Spotify for Machine Gun Kelly, it's just MGK.
Ooh, that's
is what he goes. Lowercase as well, apparently. He's rebranded himself after apparently Eminem owned him in a rap battle a decade ago or so. Forced him out of the rap scene, apparently. Sorry, Britton Gray has been bringing us up to speed on all of this.
We're learning. We're getting hip, Jamie, you and I.
You saying that made us less hip. I was worried about your hip on the scooter accident, actually.
It wasn't the hip. It's my face. Don't use your face for a break. Use the braking system.
Although it's healing up pretty nice, isn't it? Healing up pretty nice. By Grey Cup, you'll look
somewhat normal. I'm getting the chiclets fixed on Monday.
My favorite comment this whole time was when you had your bandages on yesterday and someone walked into the Green Zone Lounge and was like, did you get a nose job? Just about
Samantha
fell out of my chair.
Do I look like a guy that gets a nose job? Not that that's an issue. Like, if you need one, I understand. But I maybe for breathing, but I wouldn't be for vanity. There's a lot of other things we would need to work on before the beak.
So, Machine Gun Kelly is the halftime show. Meanwhile, Locker, Our Lady Peace will be
the opener,
the
right?
Kickoff show.
Our Lady Peace is definitely an act that I can relate to.
That's
more our speed, Jamie. I can name a couple of songs.
All right. So there you go. Machine Gun Kelly, halftime show, Our Lady Peace, the kickoff show for the Grey Cup in Winnipeg. It was
just announced.
Better than what they had here in Saskatchewan.
And you know what? I've heard good things about MJK's.
MGK.
GK, sorry. I've heard good things about his live performance. Apparently, it's quite energetic.
I imagine it is. Yeah. His music is energetic, so it'll get people going and moving, and hopefully not minus 40-degree weather in Winnipeg. Football tonight, Steelers-Bengals, they're getting going. It is the old man bowl of the 40-year-olds, Rodgers against Flacco
this
tonight.
This might end up being a decent game, Jamie.
And the Jays are against the Mariners in game four tonight. Meanwhile, the Brewers and the Dodgers are in game three of that series right now, still 1-1 in the fifth. But let's talk some hockey real quick. Drew Remenda on the Green Zone wanted to know if he agrees with Paul Bissonnette talking about Connor Bedard's new game playing a little heavier.
Yes, he was very, very complimentary about him last night, and he should have been. It's pretty hard to say anything negative about Connor's game last night or the Chicago Blackhawks game last night. When you look at that, at what they've talked about, he did get stronger, did get a little thicker during the off season, got a little bit heavier, and he has put more into his game. There's an article today by Justin Bourne on Sportsnet.ca as well, talking about Connor Bedard's first few games. Well, he got 6 points already, and he's plus one. And you know, the one thing that they were right last year about him too.
Yeah,
they really were, but I will tell you this, and I've been through it many, many times. It's hard for a young player, an 18-year-old player, to come in to a team that's not very good, because that's what they're coming into when you're as good as Connor Bedard was and drafted first overall, like Macklin Celebrini, and then try to be able to raise your game in order to try to lead your team, because both of them are trying to do that. But when you look at what Connor Bedard, he went through it a year earlier, and Macklin's going through it now with the second year, but the one thing that I think is also misconstrued or used too much, is a better way to phrase it, is the generational talent. All of a sudden now, every first guy picked overall is a generational talent, and it's just not true. We've had a generational talent. When we look at our game, there are certain generational talents. Gordy, Wayne. You can put Maurice Richard in there if you want.
Sid.
You can talk about Sid. You can argue about Ovechkin and Connor McDavid. That's it. I mean, generational talents don't come around every first pick in the draft. Now
they come in every generation, Drew. I believe that's the definition of it.
Exactly. That's the very definition. Thank you, Jamie, for reminding me.
He's very happy with himself, Drew Pacino.
Exactly. So you've got Connor Bedard's a hell of a good player. Macklin Celebrini's a hell of a good player. Matthew Schaefer's got all the makings to be a hell of a good player. Austin Matthews, hell of a good player. But they're not generational talents.
I think one of the things that was happening with the Bedard conversation, and then when you start looking, and I think Celebrini and his game made things worse for Bedard. Because when I watched those two, I saw two very different players. And and I saw two, in my opinion, I saw a guy that looked like he was working when he didn't have the puck, right? And in Celebrini. And then I saw a guy, Bedard, looking for somebody to do some work to get him the puck. And and that was the thing that frustrated me about Bedard's game. And you know, I'll swing that into a question about Matthew Schaefer. I mean, here's another kid, whether or not he's a generational talent or not is still, you know, the verdict's out on that. But he's putting 23 minutes on average in his first three games. He's got 3 points in three games. I think he, I'm disappointed because I was hoping he was going to end up on the World Junior squad this year, but that does not look like that's happening. What are you seeing with his game?
Well, I'm going to watch it. Then we're going to watch the Oilers and the Islanders right away here. He has been more than advertised. I watched the one game against, who was it? I can't remember who they played. But he was fantastic. Like you said, 23 minutes a game, and he's playing heavy minutes. He's a terrific player. Now, you know, we judge defensemen now on how many points they get. He's not going to be a big points guy in the National Hockey League. But he's going to be one of those D-men that you need if you want to win in the playoffs. He's going to be one of those guys who can move the puck out of the zone, who can bring the puck up, who can be able to keep the forecheck alive in the offensive zone and also play defense. He's a hell of a good player. And just one more thing on Connor Bedard is that, you know, Connor, he doesn't have a 200-foot game. He did not have a 200-foot game in the first years. The reason is because throughout his entire life, all he ever did was have the puck. He didn't have to check anybody. He always had it. So he had to learn that. And you look at his game last night, and it looks like he's grabbing that in his game.
Drew, let's get to the news out of Vegas today. I'm not surprised Carter Hart is the first. I right when he was, they were found not guilty, I said, Carter Hart's going to be the first guy to sign. He is the one guy that you looked at going, who can help? And that's where it gets to. Who can help a team win? I would go to Carter Hart.
That position too,
as a goaltender, of course. A lot of people are disappointed in the Vegas Golden Knights today. Do you understand that frustration, Drew?
100%. 100%. I have a lot of respect for Kelly McCrimmon, George McPhee, and the Vegas organization, what they've done. But and I know that Carter Hart was acquitted, and I read the judge's rulings, and you can understand from the judge's point of view exactly what she said, and you can understand from the victim's point of view, that's a hell of a tough burden of truth to kind of be able to bring out. But I empathize with the victim in this. And my big thing is, guys, we talked about it. At one time, there were 10 guys in that room with a drunk young lady, and not one of them said to everybody else, "Hey, guys,
not one." Thank you. Not one of those little said one thing. That's my thank you, Drew. Thank you.
Yeah, and not one of them said,
what are we doing here?
What are we doing, guys? This is wrong.
Yeah.
Now I'm a dad of a daughter, and I'm a dad with a daughter who's gone through a lot of stuff in her life as well. So maybe I'm more empathetic. And well, I think we all are, guys. I mean, just for just being older and human beings, and just going, come on, you guys. So the lack of character is what disturbs me. But I understand that, you know, the NHL and the NHLPA both agreed to this, and the Vegas Golden Knights, especially after Aiden Hill went down yesterday or the day before, that they're looking for some help in goal. Sometimes winning is all that matters, and we understand that throughout every league, that professional athletes with a decidedly lack of moral clarity can still play the games that they get paid very, very well for because they're good at playing a game.
The one thing about this that I think, and I'm not excusing Vegas, I'm not excusing the league, I understand it. The NHL can't get in the way of these guys from playing hockey again. Because if they did, it would be an ugly, ugly lawsuit. So that first statement from the NHL, as soon as the acquittal came through, says a lot about the position that I think they took. But they also can't get on the phone and say, by the way, we have to let these guys give them the perception that they're back in the league, but don't take them. They can't do that. So they have to.
Collusion.
Yeah, it's collusion. So they are doing what they need to do, or they would have, those five kids would have sued the league. And then you're dealing with that.
But they wouldn't have had, from what my understanding is, that they wouldn't have had a leg to stand on because the NHL is a private business. So as a private business, you can do whatever the hell you want. But they would have had, I think, to the point locker, they would have had a huge NHLPA relationship problem.
Yeah.
And they've been able to, over the years, mend that problem that they've had for a long, long time. And so I think that's the biggest issue that they faced. I look at it, and as I said, I have a lot of respect for George McPhee, a lot of respect for Kelly McCrimmon, but I'm like a lot of people else, a lot of other people out there, I'm disappointed. Because I think that what those players did, especially the ones that ended up in the room and stayed, there are a few people who left, like Brett Howden with Vegas is one of the guys who left. The one thing that I look at that, to me, that says a hell of a lot about you as an individual, and it's none of it is good.
That is Drew Remenda on his thoughts on Carter Hart signing with the Vegas Golden Knights today, one of the five acquitted of sexual assault charges earlier this year in a London courtroom with the scandal that broke out with the U-20 junior hockey team from 2018. Champs and Chumps directly ahead on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
You two are winners, big winners.
I think you're shagadelic, baby. You're switched on. You're smashing.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably.
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.
You're an idiot.
You're a bad person.
Each every day, Champs and Chumps are chumps going to ESPN Plus live sports.
This is ridiculous.
Apparently live sports. This came up on What's Chaos, Pete Blackburn and company. The one person on their show has been saying ESPN Plus is showing ads and then delaying restarting the action until the ads are over, meaning by the time you're in the third period, you're a couple of minutes behind live action. And they're like, no, it's your buffering. It's your internet. What do you do? And then Pete had the same. He got a notification on his phone. Someone scored. He's like, they're not even on the power play. What is? And then he checked, and he was behind too. So they were tracking it.
2 or 3 minutes.
And yeah, the ad is longer than the TV ad that's on ESPN Plus. So they put it out there, and people are like, yeah, this has been going on in college football and everything else.
It is that so, like it is me. So wrong on so many levels. I don't even know where to begin. The one advantage you have in the sports world is that people actually care to watch that live.
And now it's,
and you're ruining that? It's Disney. You have enough money.
Well, but do they?
Own the world. Like, stop it. What are you doing?
They're trying to make up for all those Jimmy Kimmel subscribers.
Good Lord. That is so backwards.
Let's go to our champ. Our champ is Bijan Robinson of the Atlanta Falcons. Last week, he hosted a book fair for 7,700 kids in the Atlanta region when he learned that nearly 70% of third and fourth grade Atlanta students were reading below the proficiency level. So he wanted to help change that. He brought him in, read one of his favorite books entitled Be You, and then, of course, he and his teammates welcomed on the field, gave him big gift bags with reading materials shirts and everything else. Bijan Robinson scoring touchdowns for the Falcons.
We are not reading enough.
Scoring touchdowns in the community is our champ.